We're Augmenters, and we build through mentoring. I'm Julie.
And I'm Jimmy.
On today's show, we welcome Joy Marcus, seasoned media executive, Princeton professor, and co-founder of The 98, an early-stage venture capital firm that invests in tech-enabled businesses led by women.
Let me ask, how do you combine college roommates, MTV, entrepreneurship, and Princeton? Cliffhanger. But no need to guess, because we're going to jump into Joy Marcus right now on the Augmenter Show. Here we go.
I sort of came out with like four different kinds of mentorship, including one, which is me mentoring others. But when I was on the receiving side, there were really like three. So the fourth is me giving. And I think the biggest one for me was group mentorship, which was not one-on-one, but many. So there are really three times in my life I've experienced that, and those times kind of still continue. One is there was this incredible group of women in like their early 30s at MTV in like the mid to late 90s that I was part of. And the MTV network was hot. You know, we were like the biggest thing.
Oh, I remember.
We were like the third biggest brand in the world. We were cooler than cool. The only place we felt slightly uncool is like landing in LA and going to a big studio when we realized like we weren't making film. Like we weren't that important. Those people were
Wait, so what era? Was this like TRL era or was this like before
It was a little before TRL. So it was like Rock the Vote. We were doing a lot of pro-social stuff. And I was launching MTVs around the world and like including going to South Africa as soon as the sanctions were lifted and starting bringing an MTV channel down to South Africa by satellite. So it was felt very kind of both important and also just like fun. And also people were really smart because they could hire kind of whoever they wanted to hire. It was, I compare it like I think when people started at Google in the mid-aughts. You know, people felt like, wow, I'm at the place that's changing the world. That's what MTV felt like 10 years before that. It really did. Plus, it had this like creative flair where there's this association with musicians and everything. But what happened was we were like this group of women. We kind of entered around the same time. I'm going to say around 93 and stayed through the 90s. I left a little bit earlier for the internet, but a lot of them stayed through it. And we were all kind of like VP level, which at MTV was very mid-level. It was not a senior position. They were very generous with titles and not on the creative side, on the business side or legal side, which was the least respected part of the channel.
Business side?
Absolutely. Like creative was where it was on air. If you weren't on air personality, I mean, it was just completely different for those people. And we were definitely not that. We were not cool like that, but we were really, really smart. And we kind of discovered each other. And we just got each other through like the best of times and the worst of times. And I would say that was the time when a lot of us were getting married, making babies, doing like the really hard stuff that women have to do mid-career just when your career is taking off. You like all of a sudden you're on maternity leave or your honeymoon or whatever. But especially like maternity leave hit me really hard because my job involved so much travel. And when I got pregnant with my son, who's now 27, I was in the middle of working on MTV in South Africa, going back and forth to South Africa, like one would go to Brooklyn. And I had this community to rely on. And in fact, when I was going on maternity leave, there was a person who was very much going after my job because it was a great job. And this community made me aware of it, protected me to the extent they could. And they did. I came back to my job. So we just supported each other completely. And, you know, we did things we probably shouldn't have done, like shared job, you know, like how much you're getting paid this year? What was your bonus? You know, like stuff you probably really weren't supposed to do. And it was just very life-changing because we were all very vulnerable. It was mid-90s, female executives. It was, you know, there were definitely things going on at MTV as there were. I mean, I think MTV was a pretty good place to work, actually, and believe it or not. Like, I think, you know, Tom Freston really believed in women and, you know, and that when it was run, the network was run by two women. So it was relatively a good place to work, but it was the music industry. There was like crazy, crazy stuff going on. And we were extremely vulnerable. and we had each other. And it was more like support mentoring, if you will.
I was going to say, was it more like peer mentoring? I was trying to think, because we know...
Peer mentoring, group mentoring, I don't really know, but that's what it was. And we came to each other with problems. Like, you know, I had a good problem once where I had like three different job offers going at once. It was like the growth part of the career, right? Two internal and one external. And I really did sit down with members of this group and like go over the prospects and say like, what do you think? And one of them notably was Amazon, early Amazon. Oh. It is still a running joke at all of our birthday parties because we're all basically still friends. At our birthday parties, like, okay, so we're really sorry. We told you not to take the Amazon job. Like, that was a bad move. And it's like this running joke is like $80 million later. I didn't take the Amazon job.
But you have your sanity, which probably...
But I have my sanity. I had my baby. I had closeness to family. I had all the things that were really, really important to me at the time. They were only operating in Washington State. So I had to move to Seattle, and it was like within a day, you know, moved to Seattle. It was whatever. Anyway, financially, definitely not the right move, but for the rest of life, the right move. So, and I'm fine financially. So I guess it's okay. That sort of group has survived, you know, cancers, divorces, no deaths so far, thankfully, but like we've really survived and thrived with each other and still lean on each other a lot.
Joy,
yeah.
If I may, how do you all stay connected consistently? Like, what is there something that you
chat
know,
groups, like, emails, right. Making birthdays? We're big on birthdays so that we know we're checking in at least for that. So we have these like giant birthday celebrations that are just completely over the top, even when they're not significant. And they're like totally excessive. We buy each other excessive gifts and it's just ridiculous. But I don't love my birthday, so I like bow out of that a lot, but I do participate in others' birthdays. And so we check in definitely when someone has a job change, discussions are had. And now, you know, we're all in like our 50s and 60s, early 60s. And it's like, it's a whole different thing happening in our careers and our lives and to our bodies. And, you know, we're like, did you use Invisalign? Like, I literally just, like, you know, with one of them, like, I just got my Invisalign and I can't fucking wear it. It's like,
they don't tell you.
I'm a failure. I'm failing Invisalign. And she wrote back, stick with it. It's really worth it. You know, like, I mean, it's crazy. Like, that is the thing. And this is, you know, I don't want to name it, but she is like a very prominent entertainment executive. And I was like, really? She's like, stick with it.
Oh, she's the one with the great teeth, right? I know who you're talking about.
They all have great teeth. So anyway, yeah. So, you know, there's always the chiclet option, you know, what do they do? They put veneers. That seems like the quick fix. And anyway.
But I really appreciate that, Joy, and just that, like, it seems like the very unique piece is, like, the birthdays and that, like, that's been prioritized from the jump. Do you remember why the first birthday, like, excessive celebration came up? Like why did that become?
I think it was either when someone turned 40 or 50. I can't remember. Okay. But there have been two 50ths that were travel and that involved multiple planes from New York.
Which that's love
really
right there.
Crazy to do. I'm not going into too much of that. I don't want to embarrass anybody. But like, I remember at the time, I had just started a new job at a big company. And I was like, I'm flying for this birthday. It's I got to like make the flight. And she's like, you're crazy. I would never take two flights to someone's birthday party. And I was like, I know. So anyway, there's a lot of mutual respect. And there's definitely, you know, we're girls, like there's cliques that branch off and people don't get invited to one dinner or another. I mean, shit happens. But for the most part, it's a very good supportive group.
And how you really show up for each other throughout your careers, right? Because there's ups and downs, backs and forths.
These are not, you know, stay at home. They're all working hard still. None of them have kind of dropped out. So it's a unique group in that because I think a lot of women in our age group have, you know, did drop out statistically. So it's kind of a unique group. It's, you know, super well educated, you know, read good books kind of group also. We tried a book group. That was like no one had time, you know, whatever. But we've tried a lot of things. Basically, we feel like birthdays are the thing to do because And we have sort of like this thing going where we just go to the plays our husbands and other significant partners don't want to go to together. And so that's been it. Like, my husband won't see a musical. So I saw Merrily We Roll Along with one of them recently, and it was like fabulous. And I was like, thank God I got to see it. I mean, that kind of group thing happened to me in college as well. I was extremely lucky. My college roommates, there are six of us all together, and we are in touch again by group chat, kind of really, truly daily, going through kind of life events. And they're all professionals as well, different professions. So, you know, there's two in the medical field. One was a very, very senior corporate executive, a CEO of a public company. And one is an artist, you know, but like very actively so. Who am I forgetting? One owns a marketing agency. So we're all, you know, very much have careers that are different, but there's a lot of mentoring and support that goes along with that. So yeah. I think those kind of, I don't know if they're informal groups or peer-to-peer or what you want to call them, but like I couldn't literally live without it.
It's like your cohort, right? It's like the group of people that you came up with.
Right.
And you have a chance to form those deep connections, and you all have different perspectives of different experiences that you're able to share really with each other because you're going through it together.
And we help each other make smart decisions.
You need those sounding boards. You need those sounding boards.
Yeah. I mean, there's also, you know, I started my career as a lawyer. I was at a big firm for 2 years, and that entering class, there was a small subgroup also there. It's not quite as thick as the others, but, you know, it's like a forever friendship because none of us are at a big law firm anymore. And we all have had, you know, these varying levels of success and trials and tribulations. And we come from kind of the same place. It was one of the big fancy law firms, but it had like a very specific thing about it. It was like, you know, smart lawyers who write poetry at night kind of place. And so everyone had that, like, someone ended up in publishing, someone ended up in public television. I did entertainment for a lot of my career. Made sense what we ended up doing. And then really most recently, I sort of formed the group like of that with forming my venture capital firm.
Yeah, so, I'd love to hear more about that.
So our firm has 70 LPs, and which is, you're only allowed to have 100, and it's a small kind of sub $10 million firms. So it's really like a movement, our firm. And that is a cohort that we rely on as well. And it is different kind. I don't know if you call this mentorship, but we definitely call them the expertise of the group in deal evaluation. So, you know, investing in a fintech company, I'll call on someone who's worked in fintech for 30 years. And that is really a group of women, I would say 40 plus, who are working, full-time working, and just have gone through the crap of being a woman working all those years. And everyone has it to varying degrees, like stories and horrible things and some really great things, right? That is like a new group that I feel like we're forming. It's getting closer. We do quarterly meetings. Well, we do for the entire LP base, we do biannual meetings, but we do like meet regularly with subsets. And we're really forming, we help a community. And I think the idea of that community is to help female founders overall and to get them a lot of mentorship through this community. So I guess it's almost like the conscious mentorship part of what I'm doing right now is like providing me, my partner, but also the community that we've created to these young founders and sometimes not so young founders that we fund and support.
Yeah. Well, something we've been talking a lot about, and as we were digging into your work and this amazing venture fund that you have. And of course, as I'm a woman business owner and having the opportunity to have those deep connections with each other and be able to share more of what you're going through as you're growing and as you're like investigating different challenges.
Yeah.
But one thing we talk a lot about is the connection to the mentor, especially female entrepreneur mentees and male mentors. And tell us, is it all women or all the mentors women?
No. Yeah. So we have around 70 LPs. I believe it's about 2/3 women.
Okay.
So a third of our sort of posse is, you know, our men, high net worth men. it happens to be, I think, mostly from the banking industry. Those are the people who tend to be able to write, you know, several hundred thousand dollar checks with all, which all of these people wrote to us, or most of these people wrote to us. And they have been equally as valuable, I think, as the women to our families, yeah. Because it's really not about, this mentorship is really not about like, oh, what do I do when I'm pregnant? Or what do I do when my boss looked at me funny? These are women who have founded a business. They've gotten through all that crap somehow, or avoided it entirely by just going straight to founding a business. And so they just want to know how to succeed. They'll pop their baby out and while they're online. I mean, literally one of them just did that. And like, that's not their concern. Their concern is success. They'll take mentorship from any source. Like, they don't need to have women mentors for that. They need just good mentors who offer sound advice and help them through difficult business situations. So that's very refreshing to me, because I do think a lot of what goes on is like, oh, woe is me. I'm a woman in a big company. This sucks. And you said like, what's different about the founders? I think the founders I deal with don't have that at all.
No, they just opt it out.
Right. They opted out of that. And the one thing they do face is difficulty in getting funding, which is why we raised our fund. And they know that. They know that when they walk into an all-male room, their chances are, you know, 2% basically to get funded. And so they just keep at it. And they're the things that I teach my class about. They have that entrepreneurial mindset that includes resilience and grit. And that's who they are. You know, that's like conscious mentorship that I've with my partner created, right, for these founders.
Yeah, do you have a formalized kind of program, or do you have a formal way, and do you define it as mentoring?
We don't define it as mentoring. I do think the word, I know it's in the name of your...
No, company, I know. That's why we call it augmenters.
Yeah, I think the word is a little overused and a little tired, I'll be honest. Mm.
And do you have a better word for us?
I don't know if we
spent our whole like first year trying to come up with something.
Yeah, augmenter is fun, but I think it's just so used. I mean, it's more like, I don't have a great word. I don't have a great word. To me, it's more like smart help. You know, like that's what you want. You want just like smart advice all the time. And I've heard people say like your own board of directors, you know, your personal board of directors, that kind of thing for support, which I don't really have. I would say that I have like a couple of boards of directors for myself that will weigh in on big decisions. And by the way, my husband is the biggest board of he's my chair.
He's the chair.
He's the chair of the board, right? Like, we are a total partnership. And you know, like, let's not forget the partners in this. So I think that's like this group, peer-to-peer, whatever you want to call it, smart help mentoring is something that has really helped me. And I just don't think I would have had the guts to do what I'm doing, particularly now, without that. Without people saying, no, you are actually spectacular. You are good enough. You can actually do this. And so that's huge. In terms of like getting mentorship, like the traditional, like someone senior to me giving me mentorship, I've definitely had a bunch. When I was internal, they were all men. I never had a female mentor. And I think that's just a sign of the times. There just weren't that many women. Yeah. You know, I had good bosses and bad bosses. Like, the good bosses were truly mentors. And there were a couple of them. I think where it fell out for me, where I needed a mentor and couldn't, was with the first time was a startup CEO.
Mm.
I didn't know what I was getting into. It was a CEO being put in over a founder, or set of founders, actually, in this case, who were very young and male and not American. And there were just so many issues and so many cultural clashes. And fabulous mentorship there might have helped me a little bit. That was like the hardest thing I've ever done. And that, I think, I just didn't have a mentor. I didn't have any person to look up to who was similarly situated, who was kind of like willing to help me. And I think the absence of it really hurt me. Like that, I think that was like a really tough situation, and that really hurt me. We ended up, you know, selling the company, and it was basically okay, but I think it could have been more. Like, it could have been better.
Was there one way you wish somebody had showed up for you? Like, because you've mentioned a couple different ways mentoring can, you know, be involved in somebody's life. Like,
yeah, like, this is how you run a board meeting. This is how you handle. It was my first time running a board meeting, like entirely on my own. this is how you handle a startup founder who's just lost his baby, right? His baby was given to you. I didn't really understand that dynamic. And it's not an uncommon dynamic. Like someone, when you're living the experience, you don't see it. Now at like 10 or 12 years later, looking at it, I'm like, oh yeah, of course that happened. Like, of course that was difficult. Of course.
And Joy, just to clarify, the baby was the business, right?
The baby was the business.
I literally was like, oh my God, he lost his baby.
The baby was the business, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, you know, villainized them because they were not treating me well initially. And that just, it wasn't good. It was like, someone could have given me advice there. Like if I see someone in that situation again, I know what to say to them. And I, you know, I just didn't have anyone in my network who had that and no one was like stepping in. So I think the absence of mentorship, I guess my messages can really hurt you. So definitely seek it out. If you're in a situation where you're like, I'm not sure what to do. I've never done this before. Or even you think you know what to do, but you know you've never done it before. Get help. Like get someone to help you.
How would you mentor earlier Joy to go out and find that mentor in that time?
There were some very good people on our board and I would have gone I would have been more open with my board. I was trying to
appear more
invincible to the board and say like, here's my struggles. What's your suggestion? Can you find me someone who's done this before? And you know, the business wasn't that complicated. Like that could have happened easily and it didn't.
What was stopping you? It's probably obvious, but what was stopping you from being vulnerable in that moment to other people on the board? Why did you feel like you needed to be invincible?
Because I thought the CEO had to come in and have all the answers. You know, that's, and it seems so stupid right now, like in hindsight, but when you're in the moment of this and it's the first time you're doing it, I felt like the CEO had to, and I knew, you know, there weren't many female CEOs of tech, venture-backed tech companies. I was one of them. So I felt this need to kind of be invincible.
Yeah, I think that is really, really, really common. And I think one of the reasons why people end up in situations that they, you know, really get stuck. And then I think what happens is you get into a spiral, right? You're like doubting yourself and you're going, you know, it's like, if you hadn't even gone down there, you probably actually have the answers. You just,
right,
you know, you get into a spiral.
I do think the one thing I will say about this kind of next generation coming up, I think they are less likely to get themselves into that situation. And I'm very optimistic about them. And the reason is I think they're willing to seek help.
Yeah.
They are a therapy generation. It's like good for them. And so they're used to talking out their problems, you know, kind of out loud to a third party already. Of course, I'm talking about a very privileged subset. So I'm going to frame it like that. Like not everyone gets a $300 an hour therapist when they're 14, right? I get that. But I do think even those that don't, they're used to kind of living out loud on their phones, like living their moments out loud, getting feedback in real time constantly. Like they're in a constant, there's a lot of bad about that. The good about that is if you're put in a situation where you don't know what to do, you can, you know, you're used to saying, hey guys, I have this thing. What do I do about it? Right. Which I think this coming up generation is more likely to seek help. And I think that's really great. Again, there's a lot of bad that comes with kind of living your life completely publicly and out loud. And I mean, there's a very, very dark side to that. But the positive side is you're absolutely willing to say like, I don't know how to do this. Like, do you, can you help me? And literally like posting it publicly.
And you also have language. I think they have, because I have 19 and 21 year old daughters and they just have language around things that it took me into my 40s to be able to say. Totally. They're just like, oh, you know.
I have a 23 year old daughter. Yeah. I mean like,
yeah,
she's out there, like, you know, like,
oh, yeah, I get it.
Fearless. And I'm so happy about it. I really am.
Yeah. It's a big difference.
Yeah. And I see that, but I can go back to the teacher. I do see that in my students, they are fearless.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm also teaching a really weird subset of people. I mean, what it takes to get into Princeton now, like they have never gotten a B. I have a very few freshmen in my class. And I know that if I give the freshmen a B, it's their first B they've ever had in their lives. If it's fall semester, freshman year, it's like, it's with a heavy heart. Even an A minus. I've had tears.
Well, I have to tell you, you teach. So my daughter, I know I talk about it. My daughter is a freshman at Princeton and one of her teammates is in your class. And I said I was interviewing you. They're like, oh, she's amazing. She's a little scary. She's amazing.
They're like, you're going to get to interview her. Oh my God.
I think it's more that your reputation precedes you. It's daunting.
Yes. No, in a great way. They were like, oh, she's so cool.
I think I'm just so different than the other professors. Not only that I'm 4'11" and blonde, elderly at this point women, but that, so that's different. That is in itself different, even now, right? The faculty, even at just this little Keller Center, which is the Entrepreneurship Center, they're really working on it, but it's still, you know, male dominated, but I consciously working on it. I do give them a lot of credit. The new dean there is fabulous and they're really trying. I think they're kind of, no offense to your daughter, a little freaky, right? They're like, yeah. Amazing people.
I wish I had had you as a mentor 5 years ago when I started teaching my graduate students at the School of Nutrition entrepreneurship, and I gave somebody a B+, which I was like, that's a good grade to me. 20 years ago, I was down with B+s. And I remember the email, like, I don't know how this will affect my life or something. And I was like, are we talking about a grade? What are we talking about?
I had a student literally break down in my office over an A-, like crumble in front of me over an A-. And I'm like, you know, so I teach this. I mean, they're like high stress, high achieving, you know, crazy people. And in a good way. I mean, a lot of them want to accomplish so much, right, in their lives. And I felt that way to go on about Princeton a little bit, but I felt that way about Princeton too. I felt like I came from a very middle-class background. I was a total scholarship kid at Princeton and I felt like it really changed my life. And, you know, so the opportunity for me to like give back there now is, of course I'm doing it. It's like a really important thing to continue to do, but there's a huge responsibility that because they're really vulnerable. They're really figuring out, and even they have figured it out, right? Like they walked down that very, you know, your daughter, like very tight rope without falling of what it takes to get into a school of that stature. And so they figured a lot out, and then they get there. And of course, you know, the thing that happens, which is everyone is that, and like, what do I do now? And I think a lot of them, the freshmen, sophomores are really facing that. By junior, senior, they've kind of figured out who they are. They've accepted who they are. No, I'm not a math person. Yes, I'm a math person. No, you know, they've accepted some things and I'm not perfect at X. And what I can do is just kind of help them through that maturation process, I think, is part of my role as just teaching there. Because I do see my students, you know, I don't say goodbye to them forever after they've taken the class. I see them afterwards a lot. Sometimes I'm like shocked on campus, right? Because someone will like call from afar and I'm like, oh God, who is that? I have no idea. Yeah.
Joy, I'm curious, do you give different advice to freshmen compared to like one of your students who is about to graduate on how to find a mentor? Like how did they do that initial entry to somebody, entree?
I'm not sure I so encourage maybe I should. I really don't think I encourage the freshmen as much to find a mentor as to just figure out themselves. Mm. You know, like by senior year, it's very good to have someone who can provide a little guidance. And a lot of times for them, it's still their parents, which I think is fine. A lot of their parents are equipped to do that. There are many students whose parents are not equipped to do that. Mine weren't. They were loving and whatever, but they hadn't got to college and just weren't equipped. I feel like those students I really talk to a lot, the ones where I know they're not getting it from the house. You know, I think each person has like a very unique circumstance, but I'm most interested. And I have a bias towards kids who are first generation college, sort of low income first generation college kids are, I think, the most vulnerable in this sort of hyper-competitive environment in which we live, in which we helicopter our kids and get them the next job, you know, we who have resources. And I think those kids are really disadvantaged. And that's where mentorship from the university, from a professor, can make the biggest difference in a kid's life, in a young adult's life. And I take that role very seriously. Like, that's where I really focus my efforts.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because I know when we think about different mentors that we've had in our lives, I think a lot of us go back to professors who may or may not have known that they were our mentor, or just things that they've said that stick with you over time. What are a couple pieces of advice you give to your students, which would, you know, kind of be teaching, but also mentoring around being an entrepreneur? What are like a few things that you're like, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you need to know this?
I mean, I teach it, so it's a little off. It's a sort of difficult question, but the things, I'll tell you the things I teach, and because I believe what I teach. I believe that you really do have to have kind of this, you know, what's referred to in the entrepreneurship literature as a growth mindset. I mean, I think you really have to be a person who believes in growth.
And in a delusional kind of way, too. Speaking of two delusional entrepreneurs.
Almost. Like, almost, right? And it's not even just passion. It's like this desire to create value. Like, the name of my class is Creating Value. This, like, strong urge burning in your soul that you want to do something that has not been done before, or that do something in a better way that has been done before. So I can tell you that I have always had that. And every time I was in a large company, I tried to do something different, like launch MTV in South Africa, right? Or, you know, make videos for Condé Nast, like, that is a print publication business, right? So everything, I was always kind of at the edge. And then finally, in different cases, I got to kind of strike out and do my own thing. And now I'm really doing my own thing, which I love. And this to me is like the fulfillment, right? But it was burning in my soul. It was burning my soul for like 40 years. It took me
burning in my soul.
It was like, it took a really long time for it to come out. So I'm like, do you have that or not? Because there are plenty of students, even those who sub-select and choose to take my class, who do not have that. And I want them to recognize that about themselves. A lot of them, you know, a lot of kids who end up at Princeton aspire to excellence, which I think all of them do. All of them aspire to excellent and to be excellent. But excellent is not creating something new always. You can be excellent at, you know, playing the piano or dancing without composing or choreographing, which, you know, there are the dancers and the choreographers. I think that a lot of my students are really excellent dancers, and not all of them have the ability to be like the choreographers or the desire to be the choreographer. So,
and like, that's okay. That's okay. I feel like there's this like, ooh, being an entrepreneur is like cool.
We need dancers. No, we need dancers.
Yes.
It would be, the stage would be empty. We need dancers. And that's, I do say that to them. I say it more like, I think in terms of players or whatever, but like, we need those people. We really need those people. And the whole first like quarter of my class, I just finished that, right, is about that, like kind of recognizing like what's inside your soul. Like, do you have this burning desire? The other thing is grit, which is like the ability to get knocked down and get up again. That song, that Chumbawamba song, I play it at the top of a class. And it's like, do you have the ability to fail? Learn from it and try again. And that is what entrepreneurship, I mean, no one doesn't have that, right? Mark Zuckerberg had that. Like, no one doesn't have that. Larry and Sergey had that. Like, they failed at things. So failure is a really hard thing to teach a Princeton student and to like and to accept. And that's, this grit class is kind of really all about that. It's about kind of like walking through walls, accepting failure, that kind of thing. So my advice is like, kind of, I guess it's like, kind of know yourself really well. Like, you can be excellent. You can be so excellent, but not want to create something new. And that's okay. Right. But like, no, if you don't have that burning desire to create something new, you probably don't want to do this. And if you also, it's like, if you want perfection all the time, which I think also a lot of Princeton students do, you will not get that as an entrepreneur. You will have to do things a little bit half-assed one day to just get through to the next day. And so,
I don't know what you're talking about.
If you don't have that, you know, kind of grit to be able to accept that the stamp is not like in the right place on the envelope kind of thing, old day analogy, but like, if that troubles you, you know, run for the hills, right? Like, truly, like, run for the hills. And it's a little bit like kind of knowing that about themselves. And I do get a lot of very kind of, there's four assignments at the beginning of the class that are very introspective, and diary entries and blogs that I make them write. I make them write an op-ed piece about this kind of thing. And they really, I think they do think about it a lot, which is good. You know, I don't know how much I change them or I even want to change them or I influence them. But I think it does help to think. And occasionally someone will come up to me and say like, wow, okay, I was really not going about this the right way. Or like, wow, okay, I need to like go to Morgan Stanley. Like I am that person and I'm okay with that. I'm going to be like the best damn analyst of Morgan Stanley ever had, you know, like, and I'm like, great. You know, that's a good result. Great.
I love it. Yeah. To share with that, Joy, I get at least one review a year that's like, love the class. I'm never going to be an entrepreneur. Thank you.
Oh, wait. Where do you teach? Do you still teach?
No, I teach at Tufts University at the Nutrition School. We have a graduate school of Nutrition Science and Policy. So they're all policy wonks, nutrition nerds. They are type A through and through, wicked sharp, almost all women. I provide diversity by being a young male teaching.
Right.
It is just a treat to let these, to be able to, the gift of these students sharing, you know, their dreams and goals.
Yeah.
But I love when I'm like, oh, wait, you don't want to be an entrepreneur? Fantastic. I just saved you so much money and so much time and so much pain.
The heartache.
Yeah. You said you had four different mentoring groups. Talk two.
I did group. I did the traditional, like that I didn't have as a startup CEO. And then there's conscious, which is like board work and kind of, I can talk about that. But there's also reverse, which we haven't talked about, which is learning from.
Yeah, let's talk about that. We love that concept.
To you. I think that I get more out of the Princeton students than they get out of me.
And they're the ones paying.
Yeah, they're paying for it. Yeah. I mean, I really think that, you know, I really know, first of all, I just know, like, I'll show you something. I have a Stanley water bottle.
Yes, you do.
Have that if I didn't teach at Princeton?
You probably have all kinds of lingo that you never would have known otherwise.
All kinds of crap in my life because I teach students who are on Instagram all the time and TikTok all the time and telling me what's hip. So, you know, I do learn from them, but like,
more why does that give you joy? Why is that valuable?
I feel younger. You know, I feel like I'm like tuned into like how people think. I mean, I get it a lot from my kids too, but this is like en masse, like every Wednesday, like 68 of them or whatever, like right in my face, what they're wearing, how they're interacting with each other, you know, how they look at each other, where they sit in the classroom. I mean, there's so many signals and it's just utterly fascinating to me, especially as someone who's trying to invest in the future, right? Like venture capitalists, we invest in the next thing, right? The future. And so sitting with the future once a week, as I do, albeit a very kind of weird, controlled subset of the future. I'm sorry, I keep saying weird. I went to Princeton. Okay. I don't think
all I know. And I'm just laughing.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
Yeah. That's extraordinary. Yeah. So you were asking, what do I get from them or why do I think what?
Yeah. What's the value prop, if I may?
Well, it keeps me in tune with, you know, I mean, seriously, like as a business, it keeps me in tune with trends. So I know my students, like what they care about. They care a lot about. They worry about the climate. They care about sustainability a lot. I would say that's their number one issue. I mean, they are really worried about the planet exploding on them and their future. And they, you know, hence the water bottles and the, you know, they're really careful about recycling and they think up ideas for my class. They're required that all have a little bit of that theme. I think it's like the big thing they think about. As a like a human issue. And there's so many other things to think about, but that's the thing that seems to be most pressing in their mind. So as these kids mature into decision-making, you know, these are like the future senators and I may be teaching a future president, right? Like that statistically that could happen easily, right? So I'm like thinking, okay, this is what they care about. What am I going to tell them about it? What am I going to, you know, how am I going to help them think about it, right? So just staying current and knowing what next generation of leaders will be thinking about is important for my business, frankly. Like it's super important.
How else could you get, without you being vulnerable and on stage, how else could you receive this same information, same satisfaction, same experience?
You mean like having more like a one-on-one relationship. So I do have some of those. I mean, I have those with my children who are 27, 23 respectively, and we're super close family. And, you know, I know what they're thinking about, but I also, you know, I have sort of picked up along the path of my career, just, you know, a couple of young men and women who I'm very close to still and call on me for advice when they're making career choices and even life choices, but also keep me current on kind of what's important to their generation. And I'm not particularly vulnerable with them. I was like their boss in most situations. I don't feel that vulnerable with them, but I do feel like they're mentoring me.
I appreciate that. It's just, you know, like it's always interesting to think about the reverse, because clearly here at Augmenters, we feel very strongly that it is a unique value that's given, and that, you know, without these mentoring relationships, how would you understand all these things? When would you have the space to be vulnerable? As you just said, it's like really hard otherwise. And it kind of comes back to one of your earlier points too, about, you know, if you were vulnerable earlier in one of your positions, you might've had more mentors, maybe different outcomes. So
absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the example where it was like, I didn't have a mentor and I needed one. Like when I think about it. But I would say my fourth point, as we're getting to time, is, you know, just this being a conscious mentor, which I've chosen to be for the rest of my career. So being a venture capitalist to me is mentorship. Like, it's not just money. It's opening up your wisdom to situations where, you know, these CEOs and founders, they are vulnerable, and just being super available to them, and knowing that it's not only me, it's my partner, Linda Clerzio, and it's also our network of limited partners that are really available to them. You know, we have skin in the game, we have money. There's nothing like having money in the game. I mean, there's no substitute for that, I think, actually. I know there's a lot of mentorship that happens kind of ad hoc, and I think that's great. And if it stays, you know, I feel like if it stays more than 5 years, it's real. But like having, you know, money invested in someone it's significant. And I think it's a great dynamic, actually, because all you want to do is help. There's no like,
you're both invested in their
there's
success.
No ulterior motive. You're like, all you want to do is help. And it's like the purest kind of mentorship, really. There are situations, of course, where financially you're at odds on exits and stuff, and that, you know, is tough. And we've been going through it as a company now, and it's all working out, thank goodness. But like, those can be tough moments. But for the most part, you're really on the same team, and you just want them to get up and feel better and do better every day. And like, you're like their coach. And so that's like really great. So the board work that's involved in being a venture capitalist is something that is very conscious mentorship that I really love. And then, as we spoke about, teaching.
Yeah.
And again, really, my focus is on like good decisions for the person in front of me, taking in the whole life experience. Like, I had a DACA kid, and that was like, he had so many special issues, right? He was brilliant. He had to take a big company job, basically, even though he could have maybe been a brilliant inventor. There was just, he didn't have a lot of choices. So there's all kinds of advice. I've been confronted with all kinds of situations kind of like that, which are like, wow, okay, like you've surmounted that. And now he actually had invented something already. And wow. He just like took a job at like, I can't remember where, like Ernst & Young or so. I mean, like he took a job because he really kind of had no choice.
Print some cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I could quickly, we do a little rapid fire association at the end. I added two words. So it's going to be six for you.
Wow. We've never had that before, Joy.
Yeah. No, we're changing it up. So, verbal Rorschach test. When I say mentor, what comes to mind?
Help, support.
How about mentee?
Vulnerable.
If I say sponsor?
I also think of it as help and support.
How about coach?
I'm sorry, I'm boring. It's just, all of this to me is just help and support.
No, this is very on-brand.
The giving.
I love it.
Giving, yeah.
How about network?
Critical.
And the word invest?
Help and support.
I love it.
I love it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I've never had that before.
Yeah.
I love it.
That was great. Joyce,
people
thank you so
are probably
much.
Embarrassed to say the same thing over and over again.
No. This is awesome. I also can't help myself, but I have to say, I love the name, the 98, not just for what it stands for and how you validate it, but I think once you and, you know, the other cohort of really women leading this charge to change the percentages, once that percentage gets to 96, you now need to go raise your second fund.
Oh, we'll do it before that. the truth is, we're on our way to starting our second fund probably at the end of this year. And unfortunately, it'll still be the 98 fund two, but maybe fund three will be like the 90. That would be nice.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, great.
You're at the 90.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Joy, it was so fun to spend this time with you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Julie, I gotta start with how Joy ended with us, which really struck me. When I said mentee, Joy responded with vulnerable. And it's such a critical piece that for you to truly transfer some of your energy as mentee to the mentor, that's the value the mentor is going to get. You have to share a piece of yourself. You have to let down some of your guard. And that is so hard when the classic power dynamic in mentoring is that the mentee does not have the power. So that's why Augmenters is here to augment your power as mentees and know that you're bringing it and actually giving more to the mentors than the mentors give to you.
So Joy was like reading your mind. She knew exactly how we were standing on this whole thing. I mean, honestly, I loved this conversation. I think she's so cool.
Not only is she so cool, but then she took it to the next level when I started out with saying, I say mentor, and she said support. And at the end, I asked her, when I say invest, she said help and support. So mentors invest in the mentees. They are supporters, provided the mentees become vulnerable and help transfer some of their energy. The circle of augmenting.
Incredible. And the investing piece, which I think is interesting. We've had a few finance guests and VC guests. So I think talking about the difference between being a mentor and being an investor, and that you can be both and you can, you know, approach it differently. So I think she provided some good perspective on that. But I loved hearing the story. It's about this awesome group of women were like these total trailblazers in the media landscape. Crazy stuff, growing MTV, which of course, you know, I loved watching from the very beginning, and just imagining what that life must have been like and how they were able to really support each other. And that she's kind of taken that from her media work to her venture work today and making sure that, you know, people are showing up for each other and they're supporting each other in the way they need to be supported.
Do you remember the first song ever on MTV?
Video Killed the Radio Star.
Video Killed the Radio. I won't keep going. Exactly.
I remember Friday Night Videos. That was pretty exciting. That was even before MTV. But yeah, no, that was legendary. Those were legendary times. So innovative, so exciting. And I have to be honest, I think all the time about something she said about entrepreneurship. Because you and I both spent a lot of time talking about entrepreneurship and talking to entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And while, of course, this podcast is about mentoring and entrepreneurship are very closely linked. And I really appreciated the perspective she brought, which was that it's not for everybody. And that is okay. It is actually wonderful. And if it is not for you, don't do it. Support your entrepreneur friends.
You can still find agency. You can still find impact. You can still find financial freedom without entrepreneurship.
It is not for everyone, for sure. So I appreciated her sharing some of her experience with Princeton students and helping them kind of see that, which is mentoring, right? Which is like, hey, here's these paths that you could be possibly going on, and let me sort of firewalk for you and let you know like what this really looks like. And if you feel comfortable with the failure and uncertainty and all of that, then great. And if not, you know, there's a world for you. That's just not that.
Find your place. Amen.
Find your place. Know yourself. Find your place.
Thank you, Joy. Augmenters out.
Augmenters out. Wow, you've made it this far, and we thank you. Hopefully you enjoyed our episode and discovered new ways to bring more authentic connection into your mentoring relationships. Want to tell them more, Jimmy?
Be an augmenter with us. Visit our website for the best interactive mentoring content at augmenters.us. Share our podcast with someone you care about. Like and subscribe. And yes, really, you following our show and writing a review, it's a big deal. Your actions provide us with the resources to continue our undefeated, unencumbered, prize-winning productions. We welcome questions and suggestions via email, hi@augmenters.us, or on social with our handle @augmentershq. We are most active and available on LinkedIn and YouTube. Shout out and earnest thank you to our intrepid producer, Erlen Cato. We appreciate you. Augmenters out.
See ya.